Transformation is inevitable, but it doesn't have to take forever. What if you could see the obstacles before they happen, sidestep the common mistakes, and drive change faster than ever? That's exactly what we're here to do. Welcome to Transformation Unfiltered, the podcast where HR professionals share their stories about how they've hit fast forward on their transformation efforts and built legacies as world-class people leaders and change makers. And now, here's the show.
I think ultimately painting that picture of a future state in terms of the way an organization works, usually the most senior leadership has that picture and they can describe it for you. And asking them to describe it is a really great place to start. They have a vision and they may even have some like business strategies that they think might help them get there. But as we know, changing culture and even delivering on business strategies in new ways requires people to change behaviors. And so I would say once you get the leadership team, or once I was able to get the leadership team to paint the picture of that future state, asking both, what do you think it's going to take to get there? What do you think your roles will be, right? Instead of here's your role and here's what you need to do and here's why, what do you think your role is? And where do you think we're going to get stuck? What might be the risk? Those curious questions in the planning phases would have gotten me so much more aligned early on.
You're driving the transformation. You've mapped the strategy, clarified the message, lined up the data. You've done everything you're supposed to do to get people on board. And yet, it's just not landing. They're not buying in, progress is slow, frustration builds. And your instinct? Push harder, sharpen the message, rally the team, and power through. Well, that's exactly what Hillary did, until she realized the block just wasn't out there. It was her. In this episode, Hillary shares a raw and powerful story of leading a high-stakes transformation in a global pharmaceutical company where change was necessary, but traction felt impossible. She walks us through the moment she stopped blaming the resistance around her and started listening to the resistance within. What she discovered was a whole new way of leading, one rooted in purpose, not just persuasion. She stopped pushing, she got curious, and she got honest. And in that honesty, she found a deeper understanding of what was really driving her and what needed to shift so that she could truly lead others. This is a conversation about control, emotion, self-awareness, and the inner work that unlocks collective transformation. If you've ever felt stuck, even while doing all the right things, this episode offers a brave invitation. Before you change the system, check the mirror. Today on Transformation Unfiltered, we're going to have the pleasure of speaking with Hillary Wilson. Hillary is a super experienced leader in business transformation and also an ICF certified executive and team coach. She has this amazing knack for helping businesses execute their strategies, improve processes, and really boost leadership and team effectiveness, especially when it comes to navigating change. She's also really good at building diverse teams, high-performing teams, and those that are focused on shared purpose and actually getting a few things done. Right now, Hillary is the team effectiveness lead for people and organizational growth consulting practice at Roche. She has this amazing knack for helping leaders and businesses execute their strategies, improve processes, and really boost leadership. Hillary, I'm so glad you're here with us today on Transformation Unfiltered. And you know that our podcast is all about bringing the unfiltered view to what transformation really looks like, the view we often don't see in the background. So I'd love to just get right into it. Is that okay with you?
Absolutely.
If that's the case, tell me about something that happened earlier in your career that really informed this, that might have been considered like a mistake or a misstep.
I don't think it was one thing, honestly, Alexa. It definitely wasn't one thing, but I think that I started to see a pattern of the same thing happening again. And, you know, one of the things that I have always had as an attribute is a high persuasion skill, the ability to influence and use words pretty well. And I went to law school and all of that. And I think kind of right around 35, maybe, or about 20-ish years ago, I started realizing that constantly being in that place of persuasion, constantly trying to convince others to change or to improve, or the value of this transformation effort, or the reason behind the strategic initiative, from a convincing persuasion perspective, actually wasn't getting me where I wanted to go. And there were a couple situations where it actually fell on its face.
I'm so glad you mentioned a couple of situations. You mentioned you went to law school. I experienced you in the persuasive moments. And I really appreciate that you're willing to say there's a couple times I think I might want to reveal. So can you give us a big reveal? Take me to a time when you know, this pattern reared its head.
Yeah, I started working in large-scale organizational change initiatives. Those things have been called different things throughout the last 20-plus years, right? Sometimes it was operational excellence. Sometimes it was a strategic priority of a large organization or something along those lines. One of the large pharma companies I was working with was trying to grapple with the tension that had been developing between their medical and their commercial field teams. And those of us old enough to remember, in the early 2000s, there were some new regulatory rules introduced in pharma that had to do with the commercial teams not influencing the medical teams, and that wasn't allowed. And a lot of commercial and medical field teams just in pharma just decided, we don't know how to interact, so we're just not going to interact. So the initiative I was working on was, how can we bring these medical and commercial teams into closer collaboration? How could we help them interface in a compliant and customer-centric way? And like any good change leader, transformation leader, there was a team and there were some stakeholders and there was some data gathering. And I built a business case and I developed work streams and all the things that we do. And I did a lot. I did some question asking at the beginning in the data gathering phase. But then once I landed on my, I'll say, platform key messages, I hung my hat and wouldn't let go of those. And so every then stakeholder group that I came into contact with, I was pushing or persuading them as to why we needed to work in this new way. In so much that I got like the chief medical officer and the CEO to do a video series, and I was writing their scripts, and I was thinking, if we just push these messages down, then, you know, the thousands of people in the field, they're going to change their behavior. My aha moment was that my persuasive skills, my approach lacked actually a real appreciation for understanding how change happens in organizations. That I wasn't out there selling a future state. I needed to ask people more why they might be willing to move to this future state and how it might help our customers and patients in the long run. What it unveiled for me was I didn't know enough about change strategy and developing change strategy, that it wasn't just about key messages and the senior most leaders pushing things down. It wasn't just about training, that really I had a gap in my capabilities.
I love that you're getting into this. So just a little recap, I think it was the Sunshine Act, a law that was don't let the two mix when it comes to the science behind a medicine and the marketing, because that can get messy. And we've seen a lot of things unfold from that. And your job, which sounds like a pretty tall order, was to figure out, okay, how do we get these two important groups in this process to interface in a way that's legally allowed and would be supportive to the overall experience of the patients at the end of the day.
Oh, exactly. And that was harder, right? It's a lot easier to not talk than to navigate gray areas, right?
Ooh, that's a great one.
It's a lot easier to just not engage. And we had been in that way of working for so long that those two groups didn't see the value of engaging with each other. They didn't see that each group was bringing something to the table that would benefit our customers and ultimately patients.
Yeah.
And maybe didn't have the willingness to do the work to navigate that gray area.
Fair enough. I'll come back to that, but I do want to back up a little bit to your role in all this. So you had a pretty big job. You, when you think about what your role in this was, what was the thing you were supposed to carry? What was the thing that you wanted to drive over the finish line?
Ultimately, a change in behavior and culture. That, and there were multiple levers to do that, but my role was strategic initiative lead, right? Mm-hmm. So I had two sponsors, one from compliance and one from marketing, and some people from medical, and my role in a core team and an extended team, et cetera. And, you know, my role was ultimately to move the organization from behaving in one way to behaving in a new way. And we flipped various levers to do that. One was, we're going to revise our policies. By the way, at one point, the leadership thought that would be enough. If we just revised our policies, everyone would change their behavior, which we quickly learned was not the case. And then I was like, they need to hear it from the top, right? This is a culture shift. We need to hear those messages from the top. And that, and then I launched this whole video series. I felt like I probably carried a lot of the burden there. And don't get me wrong, some things changed, but not in a sustainable, broad-reaching way. And I realized I probably don't know enough about change and change management. I knew enough about business. I knew enough about project planning and things like that. But I don't think that I really had the knowledge base and or capabilities in the space I needed to.
That's humbling. I appreciate you saying that. We started on, I was trying to convince, I was trying to push, I was trying to, I gathered, I learned. I hear a lot of I. So when you said I was carrying a lot of the burden, I'm like, yeah, it feels like very heavy.
Yeah.
And when you just said, I realized I didn't have the capability, what's that like for you? Someone who's always been so on top of things.
Pretty capable. It's interesting because that shifted. Like, as soon as I got willing to recognize the fact that clearly there's a lot of things I don't have capabilities in, right? Like, I also don't know how to be a biochemical engineer. There's lots of things I don't know. But as soon as I realized that being somebody who's charged with leading large-scale efforts requires a lot of different capabilities, and I got honest with myself about where I had gaps. As soon as I got there and really shifted into that growth mindset of, I'm interested in doing this work, so I'm going to go learn. And I tend to take it even the next step further in my squiggly career. I take it the next step further and I'm like, okay, now that I have the education, I need to go practice, right? And so I go seek out a job where I get to learn how to do the work that I've been taught. It's humbling, but at the same time, when you make that shift to a willingness and an openness for growth and not knowing, it takes a lot of the pressure off.
I can imagine when, if I was going to look at you, watch you in action like a fly on the wall, when you were in, I'm going to get this over the finish line mode, what would I have noticed about how you showed up in the room?
Very directive. Probably talking too quickly, maybe not checking for both understanding and alignment, driving deliverables versus engaging the team in our shared desired future state. It's a pretty large effort. So I didn't actually do all of the work. There are plenty of people that carried action items. But I think what I wanted more was more people to carry the change leadership role. Mm.
Hearing the change leadership role meet, because I really want to know what's the difference between you doing action items. And
action items were like revising policies, right? Versus being an attorney in a large pharma legal department who's walking every day through conversations with internal clients and carrying the message that we're really trying to move to this way of navigating an interface that is productive and helpful for our customers. I wanted that sort of message. I wanted everyone who was working in this effort to be carrying that messaging. However, what I've learned is that when I want leaders to carry messaging, my approach of persuading them and making the business case and showing them the data as to why they should doesn't always work.
It's a big aha. I imagine when you were doing a lot of telling, a lot of directing, that was one reaction. What was the difference? What was the distinction? What would I have noticed when you turned the corner and tried something different?
I guess what I'll say is it's taken me a long time to get there. So the example that we're talking about in medical commercial interface was a decade ago. About 5-6 years ago, I'm working in a high tech company, driving, again, leading a marketing transformation, interfacing with a global marketing leadership team, and saying to them, if you want the following, you need to do the following. And here's why. And again, a lot of persuasion, a lot of telling, and it wasn't landing. It wasn't landing. They weren't adopting the sort of leadership persona, the behaviors that I was hoping they would.
Are you enjoying the conversation? There are more game-changing insights still ahead. If you're passionate about driving transformation and want to stay ahead of the curve, join our Accelerated Transformation community. Send us a quick message on LinkedIn or by email and we'll send you an invite. Now, let's get back to the show.
What are your indicators when something isn't landing? I wonder, what is that? How do you detect that?
Usually when I would go into a global marketing leadership team meeting, I would really hope that I would usually have some sort of desired outcome in my head, right? Or I would even communicate it. My goal for today is that we all agree to or commit to or whatever. So I wouldn't leave with having achieved that outcome. And I also would feel a little bit like, did they understand what I was saying? I would get mixed feedback in terms of facial expressions. Maybe some would tune out, right? Get on their devices of some kind, or I would notice a little bit of disengagement in the room. And that was always frustrating because I felt so passionately about the work.
Yeah. What did you do in those moments when people were maybe getting on their phone or just like talking past each other you talked about? How did you react?
Probably different ways at different times. I would say at my worst, like my most exasperated, I'll give you that. My worst and most exasperated self turns the tables back on to the leadership team and says, how do you guys think we should get there?
Right? Kind of like, hey, I've done all I can. I surrender. What do you think?
Yeah. And it took me a while to realize I needed to start asking those questions not way before I was surrendering. From a more curious, a more collaborative space.
Yeah. Ooh. What's the difference between exasperated, what will you do? And what do you guys think? Tell me more about that.
I think ultimately painting that picture of a future state in terms of the way an organization works, usually the most senior leadership has that picture and they can describe it for you. And asking them to describe it is a really great place to start. They have a vision, and they may even have some like business strategies that they think might help them get there. But as we know, changing culture and even delivering on business strategies in new ways requires people to change behaviors. And so I would say once you get the leadership team, or once I was able to get the leadership team to paint the picture of that future state, asking both, what do you think it's going to take to get there? What do you think your roles will be, right? Instead of here's your role and here's what you need to do and here's why, what do you think your role is? And where do you think we're going to get stuck? What might be the risk? Those curious questions in the planning phases would have gotten me so much more aligned early on with this particular marketing leadership team. In tech, I wouldn't have felt, I think, that I was speaking a different language than them, because I ended up feeling that way, like I'm speaking a language and they're not speaking that language. Yeah. If I had solicited some of their language in the beginning, I could have leveraged that.
I think that what really struck me is in the beginning, there was a whole lot of I happening and a lot of statements. I want this. I got this. I'm telling you this. I'm going to get the leadership team to do this. And just now, I was drawn in by, what do you think your job is? Mm-hmm. What, you know, would you like to see? There's a lot more about what and you, not about the I. So tell me a little bit about what it took for you to find that secret pivot, or it's not a secret now because you just let it out, but
not
what
a secret.
Did you do to find that pivot? What did it take?
Obviously, it took some reflection, getting to that frustrated place and doing some reflection. I'll tell you what I did first in that particular situation, I thought, I know what I'll do. I will go get some education in an executive coaching. That's what I'm going to do. That will help me interact with these executives differently. I will learn new skills. And already I'm somebody who likes to develop new skills, has a growth mindset. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do this executive coaching program. I didn't enter it thinking I'm going to become an executive coach necessarily. I just thought this will help me with my key stakeholder interactions. And that was the turning point for me. As anyone who has done an executive coaching program that is approved by the ICF knows, it's a 9 to 12 month endeavor. And I had a lot of insights about myself. I had a lot of insights about my tendency toward advice giving, my tendency toward opinion rendering, my tendency toward analysis. And in order to become a good coach, whether it's an executive, a team, or anybody else, a direct report, it needs to be really other-centric and curious. And that was really my turning point.
I think that's fascinating. What's nice is that your growth mindset and your thirst for knowledge took you there. And there is a surprise along the way, I think. It wasn't just a skill you were gaining, but you said, I got some pretty big insights about my tendencies. Yep. And those insights about your tendencies, I imagine there's other people out there who love to give advice, who may be really prone to giving their opinion. How can you get to that part of yourself that allows you to see those tendencies for what they are and when they're serving you and not?
Any sort of over-rotation, right, on a strength. Because obviously, having some good analytical skills, having some good communication skills, having some decent influencing skills, those are all strong skills, and they are important. And anytime we over-rotate on those strengths, it's an opportunity to see, in some cases, we call that the overuses or the downsides, right, of what is naturally a good thing. So A, getting aware of what are those over, what are the things you see when you are potentially overusing a strength? And it's two places. It's what are you seeing outside of yourself? And what I was seeing was a lack of buy-in, a resistance from the leaders to act in the way that I was suggesting. And then what I was feeling. So what am I seeing and experience outside myself? And then what am I feeling internally? It starts in those situations with frustration. And then I have to ask myself, why am I frustrated? And what am I doing that would be causing my own frustration? There is a book that talks about when you're frustrated with another person, place, or thing, the opportunity is to accept that other person, place, or thing exactly the way they are and to look at what you can change. And so I think that was what led me to, what do I need to change? And in the moment, it's a constant thing too, Alexa. It's not like you get fixed and all of a sudden you're a whole new person. It's a constant thing. And you know what I notice now is that when I'm under a lot of stress or when I'm under a big deadline or I have a lot going on, I tend toward that high drive, directive style. And I have to be super conscious of how is my body feeling? What's my heart rate doing? How are the people around me reacting, right? And just growing that self-awareness through practice has served me. And just like the way that I left that big pharma company to go seek out a new role leading change management because I wanted to build that capability, I left that high tech company and sought out a job where I could be in more of a coaching role. Not because I was an expert in coaching, but because I wanted to build that capability in myself and grow that. And that's what I'm still doing.
So it was an outside and an inside job that turned you to knowing that I need to do something different. And I really love the way you said outside, I was seeing these things. You could observe things. And it seems like the breakthrough came when you were able to look within and maybe listen to the frustration and say, what are you doing here? What's this about? What are you telling me? And then what can I do about it? How has that, we're fast forwarding to this day, how has that particular journey informed where you are now? How did it fast forward you?
I think there are a couple lessons that I had along the way in line with what we were just talking about. I think I probably always maybe overly relied on my intuition. And I do have strong intuition, and often my intuition is very trustworthy. And my capabilities are strong, and I have a strong business acumen. But my self-awareness, I think, needed to deepen and become more nuanced. Not just a sort of surface level understanding of my strengths and my weaknesses or my overuses or my style. I've done a bunch of personality style tests, right? Not just that surface knowledge, but a couple clicks down from that in terms of how does it show up? When do I know it's showing up? How do I respond to it? What are my opportunities to develop great, some kind of mindfulness techniques to bring myself into self? That was my gap. And I also think, and maybe I'm wrong, I think this work can be done at any stage of your career, but there is something also about moving through your career, being 25 years in and having a new phase of identity. And who do I want to be in the world? And what I wanted to be was a very successful enabler of organizational change. And I wasn't going to get there if I didn't deepen my self-awareness. That's probably one huge lesson.
It's a big one.
Another one, which you have spoken to, which is I don't need to carry the whole responsibility alone. There are brilliant people surrounding me. And to be honest with you, I've always been a great leverager of teams. I like working in matrix teams. I like project teams, work product teams. I believe that every single member of a team brings something super special and a superpower that is only yet to be unveiled that we can all take advantage of. That is a true core belief of mine. But I didn't need to go into these sort of high stakes situations alone. And that in some cases, I would have benefited by being more inclusive in my effort. And maybe the benefits of letting other voices like make the case, letting other voices into the room could have been even more influential in getting those messages across. So deepening self-awareness, being more inclusive, not carrying the body of work alone, I would say were a couple key lessons for me.
I love it. You said something that really stood out to me, which is I learned the patterns, the things that helped me to notice how I was doing and how to bring myself into self. Tell me a little bit about the importance of that in all of this.
I think that it aligns with how different it feels when I am now, honestly, working in a role closer to what I deem my purpose, my big purpose here on the planet than ever before in my career. And there we hear growing up in our careers to try and find something we're passionate about and something that aligns with our purpose. But how does it shift from a job to something that generates joy? And in doing this work, I have been able to chart a path to something that genuinely brings me joy, fulfillment, a sense of purpose. It feels very aligned to who I am and what I want to do and where I want to be. Yeah. Yeah. And again, as we build greater self-awareness, we realize more quickly when we're doing things that aren't aligned to purpose, that don't feel good, that are organizations we don't want to be in. And I think that's insight that comes, but again, it comes through this deeper level of self-awareness, knowing what moves you and where you want to grow.
Beautiful. Yeah. And maybe knowing what moves you helps you know how to engage with others to find what moves them. I think all of this is powerful and you've had a lot of lessons. Think of someone early in their career and the road that you took to this transformation from wanting to be the most successful change leader by persuading and telling and just pushing it over the finish line to I've brought myself into myself. I have the capabilities and the inside knowledge to be in a place of joy and purpose. So what would you tell somebody that wants to have that same thing for themselves?
I think there are a few things that have gotten me to where I am professionally. And those things inform what I might say to someone who is 15 years my junior, say. One is that learning to exercise this curiosity muscle has opened up so many possibilities and new paths, right? I have learned that through curiosity, I can loosen my grip on the outcomes or on my path to outcomes and how we get there and really bring in the value of diverse thinking. And just by doing that, exercising that curiosity muscle, it has lowered my stress levels, my anxiety, brought me more joy. I've learned so much from others, which I love. The other thing I would say is the courage to try something before you're actually an expert. And I don't know whether I was born with that or whether it just is, or if I did it consciously, but there is something about my path that has very much served me. And I wonder how I got courageous enough to apply for some jobs where I didn't have the experience, but I had some education and a big desire to build the capability. And I think we all know, and all we have to do is talk to our friends in learning and development, and they will tell you that, like, we build new skills and capabilities the majority of the time in the job, right? We can go to a learning, we can get some content, we can maybe learn the content, but it's when we start practicing that we actually build new capabilities. And so having that courage to go for something that I might not even have the experience to, but if I'm coming in with a growth mindset, if I'm coming in with some education, if I'm coming in with a can-do attitude and some bravery, I would say go do that to younger folks, especially women who think that they need to, like, be an expert before and meet every requirement of a job description before they apply. Don't do that. You don't. Have the courage to apply and try something that you want to learn. Yeah. I guess the last thing I would say is it's easy to say this and it's harder to learn to get there. So I'll just say, as you start exploring your purpose, why are you here? When you're no longer here, how do you want to be remembered? At your 80th birthday, what do you want people to say to you? That's your purpose.
I think that's beautiful. Wondering, when you're no longer here, how do you want to be remembered?
I want to be remembered as someone who modeled courage and bravery and inspired people, both in my personal life and my professional life, to be brave enough to challenge the status quo in service of all people. That's how I won. Remember.
You've come so much more in touch to your purpose through your journey, from someone who wanted to push it over the finish line at all costs with your big brains and your super persuasion to, wow, I'm living my purpose and I'm not alone. I'm in it with other people. And I think that's incredibly powerful. I think a lot of people are going to want to know more about you, Hillary. I would love if you would tell people where they can find you.
I'm on LinkedIn, and I'm sure you have my LinkedIn profile link. So hopefully you'll share that and feel free. Anyone can reach out. Done a lot of different roles in different large companies, and I'd be happy to speak to anybody who's following this phenomenal podcast that you have created.
You're very sweet, and it's phenomenal because people like you will share the good, bad, and the ugly. And, you know, in the pursuit of just being a human who is giving their best selves to the world, there's transformation that happens along the way. And when you transform, it transforms everything around you. So, folks, I think this was an amazing point of discovery. There's a lot of lessons here. Being curious, giving yourself the courage to go out there and do something. And maybe it's better when you realize, hey, I'm not alone in this. I don't have to push it over the finish line alone. I'm going to be courageous. Realize I don't have to hold so tight to how we get to that outcome. There's other people out there that have gifts, and I'm good enough to bring it out of them, but I don't have to have all the answers. Hillary demonstrated that in her journey, and I can't wait to see what you do next as you follow your heart and your purpose. Always a pleasure. It was so good to be with you today. Now, you mentioned it's a fabulous podcast. If other people are listening, think that too. I invite you to follow Transformation Unfiltered on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe, share it with your friends, share this episode with people that you think might grow from it.
Thank you for hanging out with us and listening to Transformation Unfiltered. If you've found today's conversation valuable, leave us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast player. It helps us reach more changemakers just like you. Do you know someone who would be great as a guest on our show? Send us a message on LinkedIn or drop us an email. We'd love to hear your recommendation and appreciate the connection. See you next week for another episode featuring an HR leader just like you, who's hitting fast forward on change, impact, and transformation.